This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:06 in the evening, and you're with Lynn and Kelvin. Now, we've spent a lot of the last hour talking about the National Worry Index, which then resulted in a rather negative Nancy show. I'm really sorry about that. I think, you know, in asking what we're all worried about, it just kind of turned into a shared laundry list of concerns. And I think, broadly speaking, it's interesting to see that very few people contested the findings, which is that we're a marginally maximum worried society. And judging from sort of some of the anxieties and worries that are coming through the messages, there is good reason for policymakers. I'm not necessarily going to say the government of the day, but I think there's good reason for policymakers to bear in mind that people are feeling the pinch.
Not only are they feeling it, but they are actively watching your actions and trying to see whether or not you are necessarily responding to these worries. You know, they have been able to voice them out through many different realms, through many, many different ways. And yeah, you know, some of the concerns we've been getting is that, yeah, you know, the politicians, policymakers in general have to just be able to do more. And I'm just hoping they're listening. I'm just hoping that there are also clear lines of communications between the rakyat and their electorates. And the ones that they elected, sorry.
Yep. So we are going to... We are still getting messages talking about the politics in our country, and the conversation is moving and changing. But I did also just want to look at some of the issues that have come up that aren't necessarily related to politics. Mm-hmm. For example, we have Joyce saying, as a working mum, I'm worried about A, the ever-rising cost of living, and then the quality of education for my children.
Yeah, those are very strong worries, right? And if you have no other option, for example, if you can't afford private school, you can't afford an international school, then the only option you have is the public school. So you want to be able to, you know, say that, well, I hope these schools will be good enough by the time my kids are able to enter them.
Daniel Hakim says, my worries mostly revolve around how the next generations will turn out to be in terms of manners and education, and more on manners, actually. I really hope that they will turn out better than us. And No, I agree with that. I do think that a lot of the stuff surrounding raising kids has changed so much, mm-hmm. Because there's now so much more available, and there's so many more different schools of thought about how it is that you should be raising your kids. And so I've seen parents argue that there are some way too permissive schools of thought, right, that are revolved entirely around giving your child, you know, giving a lot of autonomy to your child. And that can result in a very confident, well-evolved kid, or it can also evolve into, you know, someone who believes that they are the center of the world. So I get what you're saying about manners. I think when it comes to education and knowledge, the fact that they have that much access to the internet and to just this whole web of information at a younger age, I'm meeting a lot of very smart children and a lot of very smart young people. So I think that as far as education and intelligence goes, we're fine. Manners, I get it.
And perhaps this might be just the anxiety of having a little less amount of control over shaping how your kid thinks and all that, right? Because children today, as you've said, Lynn, they're exposed to so much more from the internet. You know, if they have a smartphone, you're not the only force that's going to necessarily guide how they see the world and who they want to see and all their values and all that. So, yeah, you know, if that is an understandable anxiety, and sometimes it's something that's quite difficult to deal with as well.
Sarah is saying, please, could you please run a show saying what we can be grateful for? Need a happy fix. And, you know, we are having year-end specials coming up, and one of them is going to be focused on delightful news, just news that has made us happy. So I know it's a bit of a ways to wait, but it is coming up. And we do try to cover a mix of news. It's just today, I think we got... Yeah, just kind of sucked into this worry wormhole. For what it's worth, our colleagues over in the afternoon, The Bigger Picture, have recently done a show about the value of gratitude. So you could look that up and just shut us out. go find a much happier show on our site and our app that is available. Now, in the meantime, it is 7:10, and I think that we are going to be moving on to our next story, which is about how countries deal with expected tourist surges. It's the holiday season. So understandably, a lot of destinations are going to be expecting more visitors. But the SEA Games are also happening at the moment. And that has had some, I guess, unintended consequences. So locals in the Philippines, especially people who are vulnerable to exploitation, like sex workers and children, are facing the consequences, namely their worries surrounding sex trafficking.
Yeah, well, that is the very desired side effect of an unintended flow of visitors. You know, in other circumstances, in, you know, smaller scale situations, there are, you know, circumstances where, you know, locals are being priced out of the homes, you know, and people who had owned shops there, you know, they're being pushed out of that original space because they're trying to make way for souvenir shops, trying to make way for things that cater specifically for tourists, for visitors. And when I'm reading this, I'm also thinking about, you know, the first time Chinese tourists from China started becoming more of a thing. You know, they became a lot more populous as tourists around the world. And the world was just really trying to think about that. And how do you deal with them? And how do you communicate with them? I think slowly we've adjusted, but that initial outflow and inflow into the countries were just, I think, a bit surprising.
Yeah. And I think we've also seen complaints coming from locals in different parts of the world. So, for example, in Japan, there have often been complaints about locals, for example, not being able to go shop at their own market anymore because tourists have swarmed it looking for the best deals, looking for local food. And I think that's the sort of side effect of that's the side effect of succeeding when it comes to attracting tourists to your country. So, of course, when there's the SEA Games and the World Cup, you know for a fact that there are going to be a lot of people coming from a variety of countries, bringing their families, bringing their friends. And then I think the issue there is, what are you doing, right?
Yeah.
And whether building the infrastructure alone to cope with what you expect is enough, or whether you need to also look at the social aspects, as what we're seeing in the Philippines, because it is both of those things that need to be taken into account. It is both these aspects. Otherwise, what happens is you've built a really great setup, but you are going to have these social consequences on your country that you're going to have to deal with long after the SEA Games are over, long after whatever this big event is done. So yeah, we're talking today about the unintended side effects of succeeding at tourism, really, is what it comes down to. When there is an influx of visitors into your country, whether it's like what we're seeing in the Philippines for the SEA Games, where there are concerns for what might happen with vulnerable people when it comes to sex and, you know, human trafficking, or whether it's just in general, the stresses that it can place on a community, on infrastructures. We're going to be covering both. And we are going to be doing this with Dr. Saidatul Akmal Muhammad, who is an associate professor in economics at University Science Malaysia, with tourism being one of her areas of research. Dr. Saidatul, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. Yes.
So like we said earlier, I mean, we're talking really about succeeding here, because a surge in tourist arrivals is generally considered a good thing, especially for the economy. But does that add certain problems or exacerbate existing ones for a city or a country?
Yeah, you cannot deny that in addition to higher GDP from tourist influx, social issues could also be affected through this increasing number of tourist arrivals. Other negative impacts include issues on cultural issues, local community disturbances, as well as relationships between locals and tourists, and not to mention unsustainable use of resources. Some tourists, not all, see Malaysia as a transit point. They need a ticket to enter Malaysia to do whatever illegal activities that they have in mind. If you heard in the recent news, we have been informed about many Indonesians, Chinese and Indian visitors who visited Malaysia, and these people do not leave. And that is why we have these imbalances on the percentage of tourists who are in and out of Malaysia. So these tourists, when they enter, they start embarking on their illegal activities. Some involved in, you know, money laundering, some involved even small type of social activities like money gathering activities to finance their ongoing trips. Some do businesses. I've seen tourists, you know, selling jewelry they claim to be homemade in their home countries, for example. And we do not want this to be a norm in Malaysia, to be followed by young generations. So there are many social effects, you know, that are brought forward by tourist arrivals. Not to mention all are bad, but there are some negative impacts towards it.
Could you expand on what those negative impacts are? Because I think generally a surge in tourist arrivals is considered a good thing for the economy.
Yeah, because, you know, if you relate back to what is happening in the Philippines, for example, you know, about human trafficking, about tourists being involved in illegal or prostitution activities. If you heard recently that Malaysia has been listed as one of the watch lists with regard to human trafficking. And tourism is seen as an easy ticket to promote this kind of activities. So tourists come in, you know, they work illegally either as domestic workers, either at construction areas, and some even work at massage parlor, karaoke bars. I think we have seen in many news when there are some activities done and the police come and raid some places, you can see lots of tourists there, not as a tourist visiting the places, but tourists engaging in this kind of activities. And because, you know, it's just very easy to enter a country, and Malaysia is in that particular list. So people enter whenever they want. Many countries can enter Malaysia without having visa. And now we have, for example, education tourism on the rise. So people come to Malaysia with the ticket to pursue higher education, but they don't pursue higher education. You know, they have 2 years to stay in Malaysia, and they engage in, you know, gambling activities, in scamming activities, in all sorts of negative social ills or social activities.
So when we think about something like the SEA Games or next year's Olympic Games, the World Cups, things like that, we know that there's a surge coming. What are the usual kinds of preparation that countries will undertake to anticipate for this?
Well, the common ones would be to prepare the necessary infrastructure and facilities to ensure that the safety and the well-being of tourists are well taken care of. That is number one. But another one is that is rather easy to prepare infrastructure. You know, when I say rather easy, you don't do it overnight, but you do it, you know, as a process. You put it in your planning because that is tangible. You can see it. But when you talk about accommodating the possible negative effects of tourist influx, you know, you're talking about what's going to happen to the possible social impact, social activities when we have this big event coming to Malaysia, for example. This is something that is rather difficult to control. This is where you need to have what you call law and order, you know. And I think the easiest thing, I think in economics we have what we call law of demand. So if there is no demand, there will be no supply. So it's easy for me to say that stop it, you know, but people keep on demanding for it. So create awareness. This is something very, very important, you know, to prevent detrimental effect on the culture, on the environment, on the society. Create that awareness and understanding about culture, understanding about sharing of resources. And another thing that we need to also remember when we have a lot of tourists coming in, the locals feel somewhat threatened. They feel that their spaces have been taken away from them. This is where, you know, we need to prepare space for the people. We need to make sure that, you know, everybody feels that they have their own places in the country with or without tourists.
You know, besides temporary problems, over-tourism has also brought about long-term problems like disturbance in the life of residents, as we're seeing in Georgetown here, for example. What are some other longer-term problems that are common, and what can be done to prevent them in the quest to boost tourism?
I believe that one longer-term problem would be how to implement and sustain sustainable tourism development and ensure a sustainable use of resources. This is what had been, flowing around nowadays. We're talking about sustainable development goals. Because when you have tourists, you're not only talking about increasing income. You're also talking about sustaining the environment. This is what happened in Penang that you see. You know, tourism has led to erosion of hill slopes, beachfront, and these have great detrimental effect to the environment. Industries are rushing in because they know they can get easy money with regard to tourism. What more if we are going to host big events or we are going to have great activities in the country? So this is important. We need to make sure that we sustain tourism planning and we need to come up with a proper tourism development plan. And one of the ways to do it is to have what we call social impact assessment, SIA. This is very important because usually what happens is you have SIA at the beginning of a project and you don't do it anymore. So my suggestion would be, you know, you do SIA before any project is done and then after 5 years, do another SIA and see how, you know, the increase in tourism had actually bring out effect, either positive or negative, not only to the society, but also to the environment as well as to the economy.
So we're saying all this as Visit Malaysia 2020 is just around the corner. What are some specific areas that you are hoping that authorities will pay attention to when it comes to tourism in Malaysia?
Okay, again, it relates back to sustainable tourism. And, you know, when you talk about sustainable tourism, you're looking at a few dimensions. One of them is happiness and satisfaction. Another one is safety and comfort. The third one would be preservation and protection of the environment. And, of course, income generation. So these are the things that, you know, the authorities should focus on, making sure that all aspects of sustainable tourism are well taken care of. Of course, it's not easy. You know, it's easy said than done. But we need to have more stringent rules, more, you know, better laws on immigration, labor procedures, services centers, for example, you know, the opening hours, the recruitment of workers in massage centers, in karaoke centers, in bars, for example, you know. And perhaps, you know, I think at this juncture, Malaysia already had identified the problematic countries that they know and they have targeted. These are the countries who come to Malaysia with the aim to stay and to participate in negative activities. And this is where you put in much stringent laws on immigration policies. I mean, there are many things that you can done, but these are the five things that you need to focus on. And of course, when you talk about over-tourism, you know, maybe spread it out over the years. Spread it out not only in one locality, but spread it out across, you know, many places. You know, include rural tourisms, expand rural tourisms. I think we can learn from China, for example. China has a very good rural tourism that are supported by the government and being protected, making sure that, you know, tourists come, they are happy, they feel safe, environment is protected. At the same time, generate incomes to the local community.
Dr. Sairatul, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You're most welcome. Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Sairatul Akmal Mohamed, Associate Professor in Economics at USM, talking about tourism and how to account for potential surges in visitors and the unintended consequences that can accompany that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.